tell you why I love him.
'Cause he is the truth, said he is so real, and I love the way that he makes me feel. And if I am a reflection of him, then I must
be. Everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join the conversation today, 844-967-2789. If you're just as baffled as me as to like how incredibly terrible it is to take a deep breath outside, holy cow, I'm super excited to share with you that we're going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by Milwaukee County's health policy advisor, Dr. Ben Weston, who's also an assistant professor of emergency medicine here in Milwaukee.
What a good get, by the way.
Medical. What'd you say?
What a good get, by the way. That's fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Dr. Ben, as I like to call him, Dr. Ben is quite a partner to Milwaukee County, and everyone here has been really a leader for Milwaukee County and southeastern Wisconsin throughout the entire COVID period as well. So he's going to be here with us. He's going to tell us what he understands about where the air quality is right now, what we should and can be doing to help protect ourselves and those that we love. So please keep it locked in. Have your questions ready for Dr. Ben, 844-967-2789. Text him in early if you've got questions. We'll have Dr. Ben take a crack at him. But before we get there, just a couple of few things happened today in the news. And we've got the Trump sound. I will give you the Trump sound, but I'm not going to start today with the Trump sound. I will direct you to what I tweeted about it as soon as it broke last night and I listened to it, which was basically game, set, match, done, guilty. Goodbye, do not pass go, do not collect $200 from working class Americans whom you dupe into paying your own personal criminal defense bill. Go directly to federal prison. You have violated the Espionage Act. Toast is right, Bill Barr. Yeah, we'll share the sound with you. I'll give you my take on it. But if you want to check out what I had to say, you can always hook up with my Twitter at Maggie Dawn Show. It is at Maggie Dawn Show, not at The Maggie Dawn Show. If you want to find me on Facebook, that's The Maggie Dawn Show. I think now Brady will be happy that I haven't butchered that on the air. So please check me out on the socials. but yeah, we'll give you the Trump sound because it's pretty incredible. I may even talk about it a little bit tomorrow because I think it's important to listen to what Trump has had to say to defend himself and then to cue the tape and listen to it, because the thing speaks for itself. But I wanted to start in the place that I think is a little bit more interesting and ultimately more meaningful for our democracy. And that was the Supreme Court case decision that came down today in the Moore v. Harper case. This case has an incredibly complex backstory to it. It had to do with probably the only other state other than Wisconsin that has a gerrymander that is just pretty much insane. We've gerrymandered our own state seats, right? So the state assembly and Senate, but we also gerrymander our federal congressional seats. So those that sit in the House of Representatives, right? And North Carolina did the same. And the difference in North Carolina was that while the Republicans controlled the legislature and the governor, they did not control the state Supreme Court. So North Carolina, after the last census, redrew their maps, and they had 14 congressional seats, so 14 representatives in the House of Representatives, and the Republican-drawn map gave Republicans 10 of those 14 seats, and it was challenged. Those maps were challenged under the Voting Rights Act, as well as other basic constitutional provisions. Now, without getting into the merits of the redistricting lawsuit, here's what this case became about. That challenge to those partisan gerrymandered maps put in place by a Republican legislature in North Carolina and signed by a Republican governor, those were challenged in the North Carolina and eventually made its way up to the North Carolina Supreme Court, which at the time was dominated by liberals. They said, nope, maps are no good. Those are unconstitutional. And once they made that decision, a collateral appeal, not really collateral, but you'll see why I'm calling that in a second, went right up to the Supreme Court of the United States, by the Republican legislature. And what they said was, in essence, the North Carolina Supreme Court can't decide whether or not our maps are partisan and gerrymandered because the election clause in the U.S. Constitution gives state legislatures an exclusive right to administer federal elections, including federal congressional House of Representative elections. Okay. And therefore, because the elections clause says state legislatures shall decide and implement and interpret federal elections processes and procedures, that is to the exclusion of the state judicial branch. The state courts don't get to then decide if a state legislature drawn map for voting is unconstitutional. They don't have any authority. That theory, which is called the independent state legislature theory, roundly criticized and sort of mocked many, many scholars, both liberal and conservative, and a lot of conservative judges. By the way, it was this idea of an independent state legislature that was the underpinning of these fake electors that Bob Spindell and his ilk in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Ohio, and Georgia were pushing, you know, that Ron Johnson, like, didn't have anything to do with, but then maybe had a staffer pass a piece of paper to the vice president. Can you pick a peck of pip? Okay? Because nobody could figure out what Ron Johnson was trying to say. So it had this really huge overhang into, like, oh my gosh, what could possibly happen in 2024? So anyways, here's where we are. And so the Supreme Court was faced with this question: does the election clause in the U.S. Constitution mean that state legislatures, to the exclusion of state courts, are the last, final, and only word in how federal elections are administered within the state? And today, the United States Supreme Court, in a mix of both conservative and liberal justices, concluded that no, that is a theory that is not worth experimenting on. We don't do it this way. There are three ostensibly co-equal branches of government, and that's what a constitutional democracy here in the United States was conceived as. It has to be the case that state courts interpret how state legislatures want to administer federal election law. By the way, if the opposite were true,
oh, don't even get me started. Oh, man.
You just sort of spin it out. If you've already gerrymandered and you've given one party almost total control over state government, when does it end if the state courts can't really intervene? I mean, it's almost perpetuating in perpetuity. If that's not doublespeak, I don't know what is. Brought to you by your local lawyer, also known as Maggie Dawn. Okay. Really, really, really critical test of the Supreme Court here. Now, it's interesting to see how people are taking this in the context of some other decisions that have come down recently that have sort of raised some eyebrows, that the court may be trying to even out its missed calls, if you will, right? If you've lost public confidence because of the Dobbs decision, maybe you're trying to throw a few to the liberal side of the fence. But I really don't think so. This was, again, a fringe legal theory up until, you know, fringe legal theorists became the former president's key legal advisors, right? Like, that's what happened. And here we are. But we know that we're going to end up seeing some litigation come 2024 election cycle. We know that's going to happen. We know the elections in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Georgia and Arizona and Ohio are going to be by razor-thin margins. And the issue here is that there seems to be this exception or limit that the Supreme Court decision today, written by John Roberts, tips its hat to. And a bunch of people are pretty worried about this. In other words, will the exception end up swallowing the whole, and that state courts no longer are the ones who should decide how state legislatures handle map drawing and federal election law, but that it will be the Supreme Court, really. And they have very tortured jurisprudence in this area. So here's what Roberts wrote. Here's the exception. I'm not going to read any of the baseline ruling because we understand what that is. Why give you more legalese when you can just, you know, rely on my summary?
Make it legalese. Yeah.
Right. You don't want legalese when you can just get my summary. Here's the exception. Although we conclude that the Elections Clause does not exempt state legislatures from the ordinary constraints imposed by state law, state courts do not have free rein. State courts may not transgress the ordinary bounds of judicial review such that they arrogate to themselves the power vested in state legislatures to regulate federal elections. What?
Arrogation. I mean, come on now. It's easy.
Okay, so what is he saying there? What he's saying is, and there's been a new legal standard articulated here. This is why people hate judges and lawyers. The new legal standard was ordinary bounds of judicial review. Well, what is that? And what Roberts is saying here is that if state courts exceed these, quote, ordinary bounds of judicial review, such that they may be usurping the state legislature's role, then the federal courts will step in. So now you have both federal and state court quasi-regulation, or at least quasi-oversight of the regulation of federal elections processes. It's become quite the quagmire. I think we need to watch this space very carefully, because this is going to be where all of the action plays out in 2024, because believe you me, the likelihood of lawsuits in that election cycle is 100%. Keep it locked in. We're going to talk a little bit more about this when we come back. Join us, 844-967-2789, here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Network.
There ain't no substitute for the truth. Either it is or it isn't. You see the truth and needs no proof. Either it is or it isn't. And you know the truth by the way it feels. And if I am a reflection of him, then I must be fly. Because he is. Yes, he is. I wonder, does he know?
MWAUK.
Ain't got no home, ain't got no shoes, ain't got no money, ain't got no class, ain't got no skirts.
Welcome back, everybody. That's a little Nina Simone, and I am Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show. Join me on Twitter at Maggie Dawn Show, Facebook, and of course on the Civic Media app. You can get it at your favorite app store, crystal clear. Always there, easy talk and text with us. You can always just do it the old-fashioned way, too, on the old radio at the WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM. And you can call or text us on your phone that's in your hand right now, which I'm sure it is, 844-967-2789. I've been talking about this pretty massive Supreme Court case that came down today. I mean, there but for the grace of God, right? There's a dissent written by Justice Thomas, which I haven't had time to read today, that freaks me out. Ugh. Yeah, at least it's just a dissent. That's right. Strange bedfellows here. You know, again, this might be an attempt by Roberts to reclaim some legitimacy for the court as the Chief Justice. You know, some of this is a personal legacy. And just, again, as a refresher, what we're talking about is the independent state legislature theory. It comes from a strict reading of the Constitution's Election Clause, which states the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. The folks that believe this claptrap think that that means that only lawmakers may set election rules and draw congressional maps, and that governors, election administrators, and state courts enforcing state constitutions have no role to play. Under that argument, only Congress can step in to override the state legislatures. It's bananas. It's unworkable. It's just a no good, very bad idea. Rico, my man, how you doing? Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, friend?
Hey, Maggie, how you doing? Hey, I'm just wondering, is this the Moore v. Harper case, or is that yet
yes.
to come? Just a quick question, and was it?
Yes, this was is Moore v. Harper. This was the independent state legislature theory that was the thing that was the underpinning of the whole entire fake elector scheme. Yes, it's this case.
Okay, because they hadn't been referring to it as such all day long in the media, as usual. But anyway, you know what? Thanks for everything you do, Maggie.
Oh, you betcha, Rico. And thanks so much for that question. Yeah, this is the big case when it comes to how our elections are going to function. Here's the weird thing, right? This one was about the role of the state court. And then Roberts used this language to create this sort of exception that would still get it to the federal courts. But there are these other rulings from the Supreme Court that say federal courts have no role to play in state gerrymandering. It's really weird. So that's the state of play here. You think we might need to, you know, maybe clarify some things about like one person, one vote, what all that, you know, that stuff might mean, Evan, like maybe. Right. And then like you put this in the context of all of this nonsense going on in the state of Wisconsin over the elections director, Megan Wolf, who heads up the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who was an IT person. Okay. She came from IT world and like showed up because so much of our elections is now tech based and just been trying to do her job. But because some of the rulings or decisions that she had to make to help fill in the gaps in what our state legislatures had enacted as law, you know, who knew? State legislators aren't subject matter experts in elections, and they're not quite good at literally writing down every little tiny detail that you need to figure out to run an election. That's why there are election administrators. That's why the independent state legislator theory doesn't make any sense. You never have a complete body of law that you write, and you're like, oh, yes, done, perfect. No one will have to interpret or fill in any gaps. I have thought of every hypothetical. It just doesn't make any practical sense. Anyways, Republicans are trying to oust Megan Wolf as the executive director of the WEC. It's an insanity. You know, and here we are at the Supreme Court holding our breath that maybe a few of the conservatives on that court might actually want to have reality play some sort of part in their decision-making process.
We've had a couple surprising rulings, haven't we?
Yes.
You know, in recent history here. I'm glad to see it, don't get me wrong, but it sort of makes
me I'm blanking on what the other one. Oh, that was the Voting Rights Act issues out of, I believe it was it Alabama?
When the rhetoric before was really scary. They were not leaning towards this sort of outcome.
Right, that's why, you know, you can hypothesize that is Roberts maybe even subconsciously and some of the other conservatives worried about the institutional legitimacy?
We can't let
the conservatives win every single case. We got to at least throw those Dems a couple of 2-3 bones. It's kind of rich if you step back and look at it.
Or some recognition at how dangerous the line they're walking on is, that there is a point where you can't really go back.
And I think they're on it. I mean, this is a total tipping point, not just for our institutions, but it's a tipping point for the court as an institution itself. It's scary, scary times these. And speaking of which, boy, the air, it's a little hazy. Stay tuned on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm going to be joined by Dr. Ben Weston, Milwaukee County's Health Policy Advisor and Assistant Professor of Emergency Medicine at the Wisconsin College of Medicine. I know I got that wrong. The Medical College of Wisconsin. There we go. If you've got questions for Dr. Ben, you can call or text us 844-967-2789. But don't you worry. I'm going to ask him everything we're going to need to know about the terrible air quality here in Wisconsin when we come back. Lock it in, folks. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. I am Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. I'm really happy to be joined this segment with Milwaukee County's Health Policy Advisor, my friend, Assistant Professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin, Dr. Ben Weston. Dr. Ben, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this is super cool, and great that you could join us on our video. Just a reminder to everybody out there, you can see me and Dr. Ben if you are watching on Facebook, YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. We've got all that cool stuff hooked up now, so check it out on the socials. But let's get down to it. What is going on outside, and how bad is it?
Yeah, so we have these Canadian wildfires that are burning like crazy, and unfortunately, all the smoke, because of the weather patterns around here, are not really focused on southeastern Wisconsin and our entire region. So we're seeing this terrible air quality in Milwaukee County. We started the day at, they use air quality index. That's kind of the measure that they talk about. And so for context, you know, the most polluted cities in the world hang out about 160. We started today right at 160, and right now we're at like 220. So just really off the charts, terrible air quality here in Milwaukee County.
And I'm sure it being summer, that's not helping matters any.
Right. So hotter communities, it kind of keeps the air there and makes it just the stagnant air. So we think about equity from that perspective. If you have green space around, it cools things down. It reflects that heat. But if you live in typically underserved communities where there's not much green space, it just holds the air there. It traps it there and makes the air quality even worse.
Yeah, not much green space, maybe windows that aren't sealed as well, less up-to-date HVAC systems, less air purification systems. Yeah, anytime we're talking about public health, I don't have to tell you, and maybe you can share a little bit of your experience with all of us. Anytime we're talking about health impacts, we're always talking about equity, aren't we?
Right, and this is like a case study in equity. You can start with thinking about health conditions. Vulnerable, underserved populations are more likely to have asthma. They're more likely to have COPD, less likely to have access to medical care that can make all those different conditions appropriately treated. And so you take that, you compound it with the poor air quality we have, you compound it with the heat kind of sink that you live in, and it keeps that heat there. And it just adds up to much worse health conditions and much worse exacerbations of health conditions.
Yeah, we've been talking about health equity in Milwaukee County for a while now. And I know that you were a key advisor to everybody at the county as we together experienced and tried to survive the COVID-19 global epidemic. I was wondering if you could just share your impressions about what health equity means to an area like Milwaukee County and our metropolitan statistical area, and share a little bit of some of the tools that are available for folks to use from Milwaukee County that help us understand some of these health equity issues.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think of health equity, it really spans the entire spectrum of health. It applies certainly to downstream. This is what a lot of us think of when we think of health. It's access to a doctor. It's, you know, the ability to treat your illnesses, to have the medications you need. But it also goes way, way, way upstream to housing, to having a job, to having transportation, all the different things that are these social determinants of health that we hear of that really make a huge difference down the line. So in Milwaukee County, we're also working across that spectrum. We focus a ton on housing, on transportation, but we also focus on healthcare access. We focus on gun violence. We focus on opioid overdoses. We focus on our EMS system and getting there when you call 911. So Milwaukee County plays a role across the entire spectrum of healthcare.
Can you tell us a little bit about those dashboards that we have at Milwaukee County and where people can find them and what sort of information they can see there?
Yeah, so probably our most famous dashboard was, and maybe still is, our COVID dashboard. We really, Milwaukee County did a great job being at the forefront of getting information out there, being transparent, being equity focused, data informed on our COVID response. And we got a lot of, great national recognition for our COVID dashboard. But that was a springboard for lots of other opportunities to visualize and share data with the public, whether it's our EMS dashboard that shows the different trends we have in EMS, whether it's our upcoming, a spoiler alert here in the next few weeks, our cardiac arrest dashboard that'll show, where in the county, who's having cardiac arrests, what interventions are working, things like that. Whether it's that dashboard, we have a medical examiner dashboard, we have an opioid dashboard. So really what we're trying to do is just get information out there, not just to inform the public about what's going on, but equally important to provide that information for all the stakeholders, whether it's stakeholders we think of or stakeholders we can't even imagine, community organizations, academic groups that look at this and have that dashboard inform their work each and every day.
Yeah, it's a really key tool in government transparency, but also just a collective consciousness raising. And one of the linchpins in doing really good data on community wellness, right, is being able to disaggregate data. So you aggregate it to anonymize it, but then we also actually need to know, hey, what age were these different individuals that are interacting with our healthcare system, their races, so that we can understand as folks that work in government and in healthcare and in public health, how to better get the care and the resources to the right people at the right time in the right place.
Right. And when we're building our dashboards, it's interesting. It's been a whole learning process over several years of how to really build these dashboards. And what we try to do is we try to make it so that initially the first glance at the dashboard is simple. You see obvious trends, the sort of stuff you'd see on like the 9 o'clock news. It flashes up, it's up there for 5 seconds and it's gone, but it's something you can interpret. It's an upward trend, it's a downward trend, it's a big bar versus a little bar, things like that. But we know that there's going to be PhD epidemiologists looking at this dashboard, and they're going to want a lot more detail. And so they can click on the tabs, they can click on the analysis button, they can put different layers on the maps. And you can get really detailed on our dashboards if you want, but you can also just glance at them for 20 seconds and have some idea of what the trends are, the inequities are, and the health issues are in our community.
Yeah, it becomes really powerful as a former economist, right? And sort of dealing with fellow data wonks, it was really to watch that come to life at Milwaukee County and hopefully what it might do to change lives was really, it was a great privilege of my career. And it's always been just an incredible privilege to work with you and watch you maintain cool, calm, and collected and deliver really good, accurate, candid, humble information, right? Owning what we don't know just as much as what we do. I thank you, sir, for everything that you've been doing for Milwaukee County.
Oh, well, and thank you for supporting it and advising it along the way. We ran into plenty of hurdles that we couldn't have quite gotten over without you and your office's assistance. So we appreciate it.
Well, it was my pleasure and my privilege. Getting back to today, what is it that people should be doing? What are some tips, suggestions you have? Are there certain folks that need to take extra precautions? Tell us what should we be concerned about?
Yeah, so when you start increasing this level of poor air quality, first it affects vulnerable populations, folks with asthma or COPD, which is a lung condition you can get usually from smoking. It affects these populations first. And then that's at about a level of 100. Once you get up to about a level of 150, it can affect anybody. Even healthy folks can be affected by these kind of levels. And that's at 150, and we're well over 200 now. So we're affecting everybody, and it can really be dangerous to people's health, especially people with medical conditions. So what we're talking about is staying indoors, we're talking about keeping your windows and doors closed. We're talking about keeping air filters on, whether that's your furnace or a you know, portable air filter that you have. So those are kind of the main things. If you have to go outside, that's fine, especially for short distances. But for people who are medically vulnerable in particular, or people who want to be extra cautious, it's pulling out those old N95 masks that you may have put away back from COVID, because those will filter out these dangerous particles that are in the air. And then I think the other thing just to mention is, you know, we talked about this during COVID, we talk about it during other events, is checking on people around you, checking on your family, your friends, your neighbors. Make sure they're okay as well.
Yeah, it's that now is the day, and tomorrow as well, to pick up the phone and call someone if they're elderly, live alone, someone who is immunocompromised, has any sort of respiratory challenges, give them a call, check in and see how they're doing. A couple of other basics, folks, just to sort of complete the PSA. And then I've got a deep question for you, Dr. Ben, before we say goodbye this afternoon. As Dr. Weston was saying, limit your outdoor exposure, clean the air in your home if you've got a purifier, keep those windows closed. If you've got a recirculate ability on your HVAC or AC, go ahead and use that. Careful with your kids. You might think, oh, well, they don't have any respiratory problems. They're fine. Well, if their lungs are still growing and now all of this particulate matter is getting in, that is certainly not good. So take some precautions with kids. Most, I believe all of Milwaukee County's county-run recreation activities, et cetera, have been canceled for the evening. Would be remiss if I didn't include that. And so check if you had some evening activity, your old bar league softball, kids soccer, whatever it may be, check in. The odds are that has probably been canceled this afternoon. Is there anything? Oh, one other thing I wanted to pass along, and you tell me if I'm incorrect, Dr. Weston, that is, if you're a worker outer, you're like, oh, I'm the marathon runner, I got this, this is no problemo. You might just want to, you know, throttle back a little bit today and tomorrow to avoid, take a long walk, wear your mask if you want to get your lungs pumping. I'm right about that, right, Dr. Weston?
Yeah, you're right. Or just work out indoors, you know, take a day off from, we love being outside. We all love our, you know, outdoor activities and running outside and this and that, but take a day and just do it indoors for a change. Yeah. Even if you're healthy, you will notice. You probably did today. You'll notice the difference with this air. Of course, you'll smell it and you'll see it and you'll feel it. But if you start exerting yourself, no matter how healthy you are, you'll get out of breath faster. And for those of you who are, you know, big runners, you want to keep those lungs healthy. And so try not to expose them to nasty air if you don't have to.
It occurred to me as we were working out the logistics for you coming on this afternoon, Ben, that the sheer scale of what is going, like the size of the fires, right? And just the density of smoke that it can move this far and create these extraordinarily harmful and hazardous weather events, that the scale of what's happening right now with that just happens to be today, and the scale of COVID that you helped us all with for years. Like, I didn't know who you were before COVID-19 happened. I'm so thankful I got to meet you. And I just wondered if you would be willing to share a little bit. I know we were talking about you have family obligations and yet you're here with us this evening, right? And what this asked of you and the service that you gave and how it's been for you as someone who many of us were looking to as the expert when we're really dealing with these maybe historic first in many hundreds of years events of this scale and this public health magnitude. How are you doing? And how has that been for you, Dr. Weston?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Well, hopefully this one will be a lot shorter lived than COVID. I think it will. It sounds the weather people I talk with tell me all sorts of things I don't understand, but the long story short is the air should be moving out. But no, it's been an opportunity to interact with a lot of folks, an opportunity to provide health messaging, but it has been a village. There's no question about that, whether it's our dashboard, whether it's health messaging, whether it's, you know, social media messaging. There's a lot of help there. There's a lot of people working on all that. And it just reflects the incredible talent that we have here in Milwaukee County.
Well, Dr. Ben, I have to say again, my deepest personal thanks to you as a citizen of this county for your service to each and every one of us. I appreciate you. I appreciate you taking time away from your family to be with us tonight here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Network. I hope to have you back sometime, my friend. Thank you again. If you're listening, keep it locked in. We'll be back with more.
Six, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Cruz on 540 AM WAUK.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always
welcome back, everybody. I'll walk after midnight for you. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. Go get the app. It's so much easier.
It's a nice app.
You can join the conversation. Yep, for our last segment, 844-967-2789. I know I promised you the Trump tapes, but you're going to have to tune in tomorrow for the full Maggie Dawn treatment on that. I just, again, yeah. Clank. Yeah.
It's tomorrow. Not looking good, and in that way, it's looking pretty good.
Yeah. Not good for DJT, good for democracy in America. But we've got some breaking news. Had to bring it to you here on the Maggie Dawn Show because just as I was saying the words Megan Wolf, J.R. Ross is giving us some dropped new info. Per J.R. Ross, the Wisconsin Elections Commission failed this evening to reach consensus on renominating Megan Wolf as Wisconsin's top elections official, which Democratic appointees argued left her in the administrator's job indefinitely. All right, listen to what I'm going to say here. The Wisconsin Elections Commission is six members. Three of them are Republicans. Three of them are Democrats. So you would kind of think you'd get three Democrats voting to renominate Ms. Wolf, and the three GOP folks opposing it, potentially leading to a tie. But aha! Everybody be playing games with our elections. Everybody be playing the games. Instead of just dealing with Megan Wolf and her credentials and her execution of the job, which unquestionably, as every federal court case has shown, challenging the Wisconsin election results, including court cases heard by Trump-appointed judges, she did her job perfectly well. And in fact, I would say extraordinarily so, given all of the crap that was being spewed every day by Trump and his co-conspirators. But here's what the vote was. Six members of WEC, three Republicans, three Democrats, you'd expect all else being equal, three votes against, three votes for, coming from the Republicans and Democrats respectively. But no. The Republicans that got a They got to play with our election. So all three GOP members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission voted to renominate Wolf. Oh, well, wasn't that nice? They're putting democracy ahead of dogma. They're putting good policy ahead of partisan politics.
It's awfully sad that this is a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's not a surprise because if the Democrats had voted for her as well, they would have moved it on to the state Senate, because they have to confirm her, where she probably would have been voted out. Sure. But instead, and boy, ain't karma a friend. I don't know if I can say the B word. Ain't karma
a
friend.
I think you can. You sure can.
I'm just going to not. Uh-huh. Ain't karma your friend, because here's what the three Democrats did. They abstained. What did that spell? That spelled a tie. Three abstentions. And I could explain the Roberts rules behind this. They must have some unique Roberts rules because usually abstentions. Oh, no, this is the typical rule. Abstentions under normal rules effectively. Oh, no, this is not the normal rule. Okay, we'll do a quick Roberts rules tangent here. have to, right? We're all here for the wonk.
Got to do it.
Under normal Roberts rules, abstentions don't count as votes at all because they're supposed to be non-votes, right? It's like I'm not taking a position. But under certain adopted versions of Roberts rules, abstentions actually operate as no votes. And so here, if it requires a majority of the Wisconsin Elections Commission and you only get three yays and then you get three abstentions and those effectively work as no votes, then you have a tie, which means there was no action taken on her renomination.
But they didn't vote, so hey.
Right. My point here is that I'm guessing that they have some wonky Roberts rules here and that the abstention actually ended up counting as votes because otherwise you wouldn't have a tie vote. So, boy, we're learning a lot of nifty, wonky stuff here. The Wisconsin Elections Commission, when you vote, if it's an abstention, it still counts as a vote. So they ended up with a tie. And because they ended up with a tie, Megan Wilf, here it is. There's only two options for the answer to this question. Because the Wisconsin Elections Commission couldn't make a vote on whether to renominate Ms. Wilf, does Ms. Wilf get to keep her job, yes or no?
Well,
according to the Wisconsin Supreme Court decision of just a few months ago, the answer is she gets to keep her job indefinitely. And why? Why did we end up here in such a bizarre land where people are supposed to be renominated for Senate confirmation and they're not renominated and they don't get renominated? And that means they get to what? They get to what? Keep their job.
Is there any qualifiers on there? She gets to keep her job until...
Nope, indefinitely. And here's why we got here. Because everybody remember that jerk that wouldn't leave the Natural Resources Board?
That's why I asked. Because there was no sort of immediate replacement for him. He just got to keep it. Yes! And they weren't going to vote for
him. Yes, that is what is going on here. So because the Walker-appointed Natural Resources Board guy overstayed his term and refused to step down, there was a court case that went up and said, like, if you don't have a renomination, then what happens to the incumbent whose term is supposed to be over, but there's not a renomination or a newly confirmed person into that role? Wisconsin Supreme Court, you know, with its conservative majority, that Walker appointee, what do you think that they decided? Oh, they decided that guy just gets to stay in place indefinitely.
Though, without a good faith effort to make that nomination, that they can just draw it out. It feels a little like a loophole, I'm going to say, like a giant
just
loophole.
A little like a loophole that makes no sense. So here we are through the looking glass. The three GOP members of the Wisconsin Election Commission, breaking news, voted to renominate Ms. Megan Wilf as executive director of the Wisconsin Election Commission. The three Democratic members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, yeah, they abstained. So we got a tie, and that means Ms. Wilf, what class? That means Ms. Wilf gets to keep her job.
Keep her job.
Indefinitely. I hope I'm hearing cheering from the rafters. It all makes so much sense, doesn't it? With a little dash of Robert's rules on this June 27th, Tuesday afternoon. Remember, stay indoors if you can. Keep your doors and windows shut. Turn the AC on. Recirculate. Wear your N95 if you're going outside. And call your loved ones, friends, and neighbors. They've got respiratory issues or are otherwise elderly, young, or immunocompromised. Take care of one another and yourself. I am Maggie Dawn. It's been another episode of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. Thank you, Evan. I appreciate you.